When it comes to raising our kids in the 21st century, the vast parenting landscape has changed considerably from just a generation ago. Since the cyber world has descended upon us, digital technology is now as much a part of everyday family life as religion, bicycles, Little League, and Barbie dolls once were. Navigating the cyberscape is now a non-negotiable parenting responsibility, and we'll be talking about that today on License to Parent. Well, hello and welcome once again to License to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program for teens in crisis. Our host on License to Parent is Trace Embry, the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill, and I am his digital guardian, Rich Rossell. Trace, you know, I say that in jest, but really most of us probably do need a digital guardian these days, someone to watch over our internet and digital media habits and keep us out of harm's way. That certainly is true of our kids today. I know, though, that you often say, in a day when our kids need their parents most, they have them least. And I think you're referring to the parents' physical presence, but not only that. I mean, there is an exceptionally high divorce rate these days that may keep one parent out of the home. So many families these days have both parents working outside the home. It is becoming so that most homes really don't have a strong parental presence a lot of the time physically. That's right. But you're also talking about the time and attention that gets lost in the parent-child relationship because of distractions. Distractions that are often self-inflicted, I would say, by all the digital technology that we allow into our homes and into our lives.
Yeah, absolutely, Rich. You know, I just spent 2 weeks with a young couple with three small kids, and as I was kind of taken aback by how distracted and inattentive these parents were to their three kids. And this was partly due to their digital use. And if our listeners ever get a chance to watch Dr. Edward Tronick's still face video on YouTube, you can just go to Google still face video. It paints a disturbing picture of what could be going on in the parent-child relationship of a lot more families than we care to admit today. This video is just one small and quick example of the effect on children when parents are physically present but emotionally and intellectually absent.
And for those who haven't seen it, a brief description, because I have seen this video. It's a mom and her small child. We're talking under 2 years old, I think.
Yeah, right about that.
On camera. And it's in a controlled environment type thing. But the mom is told to interact with the child, and the child's playing and whatnot. And then the mom is told to kind of ignore the child. The mother is present, but emotionally not present from the child's point of view. She's kind of ignoring what goes on.
It's hard to watch.
It is. The child, I won't say goes berserk, but the child gets very agitated.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a real problem. And that's, you know, that's only over a few minutes period of time. Yeah. Imagine
if
you expand that to life in general.
Sure.
Well, I think today's guest knows quite a bit about distractions. He has written a 360-page book on distractions, if I can describe it that way. It's called Navigating the Cyberscape, Evaluating and Improving Our Relationship with Smartphones, Social Media, Video Games, and the Internet. His name is Ryan Anderson. He received his PhD in medical family therapy from East Carolina University and completed his internship at the Duke Comprehensive Cancer Center. He has worked as a family therapist in a variety of settings, and I might say, since we're here at Shepherd's Hill Academy, a therapeutic residential program, he even has experience working in therapeutic and residential treatment programs for teens. He has taught at the university level. He's been a speaker at various conferences. And as an aside, spent about a decade working to various degrees in video game design and production. By the way, my son was delighted to hear about that. More recently, though, he's been part of the development team and is the clinical director for Telos U. That's an organization designed to help young men with depression, anxiety, processing issues, learning difficulties, and electronics addictions transition to young adulthood. When he comes up for air, Ryan also enjoys a lot of hobbies, but he says most of all he likes spending time with his wife and their two sons, and that, in our opinion, qualifies him most for being on License to Parent today.
Ryan, welcome to the License to Parent broadcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, going through your book, what I really appreciated right from the jump is that you challenge your readers to examine themselves and to really think about the relationship with the digital world. Can you elaborate on the importance of this, particularly as it pertains to parenting our kids?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think we have as a challenge parenting our kids is we want them to have a healthy relationship with their digital technology. But when they look around them for good models of that, it's going to be really hard to find.
Sure.
You know, as I've been thinking about it, trying to find examples of unhealthy relationships with digital media in the United States isn't like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's like looking for a particular piece of hay in a haystack. There's just so much of it. They're surrounded by it. And so one of the things that we may not recognize is that as parents, we may be the first good example of digital media our kids may come across. Hmm. But also, we may not recognize how ineffective we're being in our parenting because we've been sucked into an unhealthy relationship with our electronics without realizing it.
Yeah.
So as is the problem in most parenting cases, if you want to help your children, you need to start by looking at yourself. And
sure.
That's definitely true when it comes to digital media.
Hmm. I'm curious about this. We talk about this a lot on our program, digital addictions. But in your context, how do you actually define digital abuse as opposed to just, well, I access digital media a lot?
I think the best definition I've ever found came from Dr. Douglas Gentile when he said, we can determine that something is an addiction or unhealthy because it's beginning to have negative impact on other aspects of their lives. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about abuse, we take a look at, is it taking a toll on relationships? Is it taking a toll on your cognitive development? Is it taking a toll on your morals and your ethics? And so when we see that there is a price that it is exacting upon people, at that point in time, I think it's really valid to say, I think we may have a case of abuse here.
Yeah. Well, when does one become an eye slave? Where is the line of demarcation between abuse and addiction, or is there a line?
An eye slave. I like that.
That's a great term. Well, there is a very specific line for addiction. There are criteria. First of all, we see that there's tolerance, a buildup of tolerance. In other words, you need more and more of the particular substance, be it cocaine or be it the amount of time you spend playing Candy Crush Saga.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have more and more of the interaction to have the same level of satisfaction.
Yeah.
The second major feature of an addiction is that you have to experience withdrawal. When you are no longer using it, when you don't have access to it, you become agitated. There are physical symptoms. There's emotional symptoms. You're more edgy. You're more cranky. Mm-hmm. You're more anxious. And other things just don't feel like they're exciting anymore.
Yeah.
There's a loss of control. Your own efforts to try to keep it within certain bounds fail. Other people's efforts to keep it in control also fail. And so, like they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, one beer is too many, 1,000 are not enough.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about 1 minute on Facebook, will never feel like enough.
Yeah.
You could just continue to consume it, and you just don't have any sense of being satisfied or any sense of when it's time to be done.
I would imagine that the levels of use or overuse differ from person to person. The downside that I'm seeing here is this is kind of like the, to use an old analogy, the frog in the hot water. You know, it if it's in the water when it's cool and the water gradually heats up, the frog doesn't realize he's being cooked. So are there any concrete barriers that one sets up to be able to avoid getting to that point?
I think there are a lot that we can use. How well we actually use them, well, that's another question.
Yeah.
Number one is, I say, let's take a look at some of the most common symptoms that people are having an unhealthy relationship with their electronics. First of all, what's the first thing you do in the morning? Is it check your phone?
Mm.
Well, that's a really common factor among people who have unhealthy relationship with electronics.
Mm-hmm.
What's the last thing you do at night? Check your news feed? Check out something on YouTube? That's also a really common factor.
Yeah.
Then throughout the day as well, one of the difficult things, especially about having a smartphone, is that there's always something coming through. It's constant novelty.
Right.
And a lot of us experience what scientists are beginning to call FOMO, which stands for fear of missing out. Mm. If I'm not constantly on there, I might miss out on something Kanye West says or what Ashton Kutcher's having for his snack.
That's a good thing.
No. Yeah, no kidding. I think my life will go on okay if I don't understand those things. Right. But the interesting thing is there's a constant sense of the speed of what goes on in the digital world is so much faster than the speed of the way things develop in the physical world. And all of us as human beings, we do have a neurological drive towards novelty,
mm-hmm.
new things, new stimulus. This is good. It helps us be creative. It helps us not just sit and stagnate.
But the brain actually works more effectively slower. Doesn't this?
Oh, absolutely.
This jump starts the brain in a way that it wasn't wired to be.
I couldn't agree with that more. The interesting thing about the part of our brain that's wired for novelty is it was not calibrated for a world that moves by at that speed.
Right.
And so we don't necessarily have a point of feeling full with novelty. We never wake up and say, wow, that's too much new and interesting stuff. I don't really want anymore.
No.
And so in some ways, the way that technology has developed, it's not developed in a way that's calibrated for our brain. But you're absolutely right. In fact, you happen to hit upon one of my soapboxes, is that we have two worlds. And there's the competition from the digital world, and a lot of us have fallen into the trap of thinking that we can multitask, we can sample both at the mm-hmm. same time. But if there is one thing, that the science on this is extraordinarily clear, human brains are not wired to multitask.
Yeah.
We're not good at it,
right.
And we can't get good at it. Practicing doesn't make you better. And the funny part for me is people who think they're better are actually demonstrably worse.
Yeah.
And so any sense we have that we're getting good at multitasking is actually just a demonstration of how good we are at self-deception.
We're talking today with our special guest, Ryan Anderson. Ryan is author of the rather extensive book entitled Navigating the Cyberscape, Evaluating and Improving Our Relationship with Smartphones, Social Media, Video Games, and the Internet. A lot more conversation still ahead, so please stay with us. You're listening to License to Parent.
Remember back in the late 80s and early 90s as the internet hit the scene? You know, the information superhighway? We had great hopes that this new knowledge economy would make our teens more aware, diversify their tastes, and improve their verbal skills. But the Enlightenment didn't happen. Technology has had the opposite effect. What once promised great hope for the future is now used to indulge in diversions. The Dumbest Generation by Mark Bauerlein, subtitled How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30, presents a portrait of the young American mind at this critical juncture, revealing the true cost of the digital age and our last chance to fix it. The Dumbest Generation by Mark Bauerlein, available in the store at licensedtoparent.org. Proceeds benefit the Shepherd's Hill Academy Scholarship Fund.
I'm Joe Dallas. So many men and women go into parenting blindly, without training, without education, without proper mentoring. More than ever today, there is a critical need for voices that are explaining to potential parents what it takes to raise a child, and to existing parents what it takes to raise that child properly. License to Parent is part of the solution to the problem of a lack of proper parenting, and I'm very proud to be associated with that solution.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit licensedtoparent.org.
Now, This is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential treatment program helping teens in crisis and their families. We're located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. If you'd like to find out more about the broadcast or about the outreach of Shepherd's Hill, you can find us online at licensedtoparent.org. And again, our guest on today's program is Ryan Anderson, author of the book Navigating the Cyberscape, Evaluating and Improving Our Relationship with Smartphones, Social Media, Video Games, and the Internet. Do we run the same risks by unleashing our kids on this world of information?
Yes, the Internet is an amazing place for information. I use it for that all the time. However, it's kind of like it's a world full of digital junk food.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
There's no labels on any of the food. Nobody knows how to determine whether this is just 99% filler
right. And
what's really solid and what's really valid. And so my experience has been the way that people absorb information on the Internet follows a couple of patterns. Number one, they cherry pick. They simply look for what reinforces
their presuppositions.
Their prejudices.
Yeah, exactly.
And then from there, they just say, oh, look, the Internet proved me right.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the Internet has a very strong current of groupthink, of sucking us into large pools of people who are expressing a similar idea. But the scary thing to me about groupthink is that it begins to, one, eliminate our ability to think critically.
Right.
And two, it actually tends to radicalize us and polarize us. And so we get more and more worked up, more and more certain about bad data, and less likely to think critically and circumspectly about our situation.
Yeah.
And I've seen this happen, and I've seen this cause tremendous pain and suffering to individuals and families.
See it all the time.
We become information lemmings.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, because of digital technology, we live in a day when kids are arguably more knowledgeable than kids of past generations. Yet, referring to today's kids, Professor Mark Bauerlein of Emory University wrote a book called The Dumbest Generation. So what does this say about, number one, how parents should be monitoring the kind of knowledge that their kids are receiving, and two, how parents should determine wisdom and then teach wisdom to their children as they acquire new access to these greater blocks of knowledge? Because I think what we have is a situation where we have a ton of knowledge and no wisdom to use the knowledge that we acquired.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, one of the things I think about is if you catch this early, if you begin with good habits around this, it's so much nicer.
Sure.
So what I would recommend is for parents with young children, from the very beginning, you want to have talks with them about what they're learning and where they're learning it from, and ask the question I love to ask the most is, how do you think they know that?
Yeah.
You know, this person claimed that this thing is true or that thing is true. How do you think they knew that? Part of what you're doing is, since you're not spending all your time checking your own email or sending texts or playing, you know, whoever knows what you're playing on your smartphone, that you're creating all these small moments where you can touch base with your child about, you know, I read this in a news article today online, and, you know, this is a part where I was wondering, you know, this part felt like it wasn't quite right to me, and here's the reasons why I couldn't trust that information. So hopefully you're having a lot of conversations with them about the data you're consuming and how you're evaluating it, and you're modeling that for them.
Yeah.
And that as you're doing that, you can also ask them about, well, what are some of the things you've read lately? You know,
sure.
And so it's one of those things where hopefully you've started young, and if not, you can always start by doing it yourself out loud around them.
Yeah. You know, I think about the tree of knowledge in the Garden of Eden and how it caused, you know, Adam and Eve to have a different perspective on things. It kind of basically they became their own God there for a little bit. Is it possible that we've delved into a realm of knowledge that is dangerous for mankind as a whole? I mean, you know, I sometimes see God working emblematically in life, and I'm looking at this Apple computer right now.
With the bite taken out.
Taken out of it, you know, as if it's kind of God's little emblematic way of saying, hey, look, that thing is not infinitely wise and knowledgeable. And Is there a reason why Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and all the execs at Silicon Valley send their kids to Waldorf schools? I mean, where paper and pencil are the thing, you know, are the things they use. They don't use digital technology. Is there some kind of conspiracy going on here, or is this just how things are panning out in this, in the history of mankind? I mean,
what are your
thoughts?
Any thoughts on that?
That's a very thoughtful question, and I'll try to give, I have some thoughts about it. I'll try to give as a concise an answer as I possibly can, but it's a big question.
Yeah.
One of the things I have come to believe is that in many ways, our digital media is like fire. You know, having worked as a wilderness therapist for myself, I began to get much more of an appreciation of what ancient cultures' relationship with fire was like. It's an amazing thing.
It's almost,
you know,
spiritual.
It keeps you alive. It cooks your food. It, mm-hmm. it gets rid of germs. It cauterizes wounds.
Sure.
And it's a wonderful gathering place for the family. But outside of its bounds, it can burn the world down.
That's exactly right.
And I think in some ways that digital media is much the same. Fire, it's not good or evil, but it has a place.
That's
and we
exactly.
have a relationship with it.
Yep.
And if we know and understand and respect that, it brings some light into our lives, literally.
Yeah.
And I think digital media can do the same. It's done so much for breaking through barriers of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
From the time I spent working in cancer care, seeing how digital media help actually heal people, it's an amazing thing.
Sure.
But I think one thing we as a culture don't understand are its boundaries.
Right.
How to keep the fire in the fire pit.
Sure.
And not ravaging through the forest. And so I think the greatest danger I think there is that, one, we don't really understand our technology. Most of the common knowledge about it is based on myth, misunderstanding, and misinformation.
Yeah.
So we don't understand the phenomenon as a whole. We like it. We jump on board because it's new and shiny and exciting and fun. But also, we don't understand ourselves. We
mm-hmm.
don't perceive how we are being molded by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't perceive how it's changing us. And many of our children have never seen a contrast. They've never seen a world
right.
otherwise.
Yeah, like the fish doesn't know he's wet.
Precisely. And so in my mind, at least the conclusion I have drawn, is if we can be mindful and thoughtful and truly understand what is the nature of tech, what is our nature, and what is the nature of our relationship between us, that the bounds of that fire pit make sense, and our lives are enriched when we keep it in the fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree, if we simply turn it loose, if we simply just accept it and do everything we can to feed it, it does and have the ability to, but not only the ability, many times it does, it consumes us.
What?
And so that's my thoughts about that, the short version of my thoughts. I could speak a little to the conspiracy part if you want me to say that too.
Well, unfortunately, we're kind of running out of time. We've got to have you back. I mean, we've got to have you back and do this again. But I think we've turned it loose, and we've thrown our kids into a system that they probably shouldn't have been thrown into. When technology was moving at the speed of sound back at the turn of the last century, automobiles came on the scene, and a lot of people got hurt and killed before we realized that there needed to be some safety features involved in automobiles over the years. And now that the technology is moving at the speed of light, when you fast forward 100 years, I think we've not come to realize the deep dangers involved. I believe that smartphones, for instance, are an adult toy. I don't think that kids should be having these things, and that's just my take on it. But I think that everything moves so fast that we just, like lemmings, follow one another off the cliff in this area. And
the challenge, too, with that is that unlike an automobile accident where you immediately see the devastation,
right.
with this, it's hidden for a long
yeah.
time. And as Ryan
yeah.
was discussing, you know, you start seeing the signs, but it takes time, and it's much later before you recognize
yeah.
the damage. Ryan, in our last moment, what can parents do to make their digital world, their digital environment, a healthier one, not only for themselves, but for their kids? What would you recommend in order to try to rescue this from that that precipice that the Lemmings are standing by?
Sure, and I'll try to be concise. I think the first thing, if I had to tell everyone, step number one is you need to begin by really with open eyes looking at your relationship with tech. And you need to not just say, I think I'm doing all right. Actually measure it. You know, take a day, write in your journal, trace what your relationship with it has been. There's no way to improve the relationship until you understand the relationship. So I would say that's the first step. You know, with that, like I said, give up some habits that are based on myth. You know, don't try to multitask.
Yeah.
Don't check your smartphone first thing in the morning, last thing in the day. I would also say begin by creating tech-free portions of your day every day. Mealtime is sacred. You need to have that time to be very present with the people who are right there in front of you. You know, the internet's not going anywhere. It's going to be there after dinner.
That's right.
Your kids aren't going to be.
That's right.
And that time needs to be for them.
Yeah.
So I would say always prioritize the people you're with. You know, phone calls, texts, social media notifications, they're requests, not demands. Don't treat them like they're demands.
Good point.
You know, treat the things that are truly urgent like they're urgent. This moment is fleeting.
Yeah.
And you can miss. I often say life is what goes on in the background while you're checking your smartphone.
Yeah, there you go.
Boy, that's a paradox.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
And since the addict is always the last one to know, would it be wise to get an outside objective source to say, hey, I'm holding you accountable for your digital life? Yeah. Is that?
Yes. Absolutely. I think you need to have a real person do that for you.
Sure.
And also, this is one of the places where you can actually use your tech to help you with your tech.
Sure.
You know, if you want to have one that just is very gentle but begins just by telling you the truth,
right,
there's an app called Moment. And
Moment.
All it does is through the day, it shows you exactly how much time you've spent doing everything.
Ah.
And for most people, it blows them away.
Oh, sure.
It's oftentimes three times what they expected.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Interesting.
Our guest today on Licensed to Parent has been Ryan Anderson. His book, Navigating the Cyberscape, Evaluating and Improving Our Relationship with Smartphones, Social Media, Video Games, and the Internet, is available, not surprisingly, on the Internet at Amazon.com. Ryan, it has been a pleasure to have you on the program. We do hope you'll join us again on a future broadcast. Thanks so much for being a part of this.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And this is Licensed to Parent, a broadcast ministry of Shepherd Till Academy. You can learn more about us online as well at licensedtoparent.org. While there, you can find out more about the ministry of Shepherd Till and our Christ-centered residential program for teens in crisis. And that's also where you can listen to archives of our past programs and where you can get your copy of the DVD, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. We want to do our best to equip you to be the kind of parent God intended. So check out all of our parenting resources once again at licensedtoparent.org. For Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rozzle. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's program, please tell a friend and then make plans to join us again next time to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody or something else will. God bless you. See you next time.